Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the Hiring Success Podcast. I'm Kaya, and together we're going to do a deep dive into Twitter with their Director of Talent Experience, Steve Fogarty. We're going to learn things like how Twitter is building its talent experience team and what pillars it's using to structure it. We've been lucky enough to have Steve at the last two Hiring Success conferences in San Francisco, and today, as we revisit his session, we are reminded of what an awesome guy he is. In his former job as Senior Director of Talent Acquisition at Adidas, Steve was driving innovation in the people programs. He then joined Twitter in early 2018, and since then, he's fallen hard for the social media site, often using the hashtag #LoveWhereYouWork. And here's Steve's philosophy, and I quote, "The health of our Twitter team depends on the experience we create for our employees at every step in their journey, from applicant to hire." Before starting, let's get some context around Twitter, shall we? Twitter has been around since 2006 and boasts about 3,900 employees. It is unique in that it has a very extensive reach for such a small organization, so they live and die by their ability to be agile and innovative. With almost 200 million users worldwide and about 460,000 new Twitter accounts opening daily, the teams are always looking for new ways and new talent to improve their product and grow their business. Before we talk, don't forget to like and subscribe to get the latest from the Hiring Success Podcast. All right, let's hear it.
Today, I'm going to take you through how we built this team and what we're focused on and what's important to us. And part of building a team like this, I think, you know, when you start a company and you've worked in the industry for a while, we're constantly being flooded with best practices and hearing about what other companies are doing, what Zappos doing, what's Netflix doing. And probably the most important thing you can do when you join a company is really figure out what's the soul of that company. And I think our job in Talent Experience is how do we help it become the best version of itself? And so I always like to start with who is this company? You know, we have a platform with quite extensive reach, but small organization. And that puts us very close to the product. It also makes us very fast and very nimble, and we have to build around that. And I like to say we're a company that's just sort of hit the college age. So we were the darling in the industry back as late as 2014. And then I say we went through our middle school and in high school age where we weren't sure if we were going to make it. We went through some pretty tough times, and now I feel like we've reached college. So we're becoming a little bit more mature, and we're starting to put some of the foundations in place for scale. So you got to really understand the heart and soul of the company. You also have to understand what are the factors externally that are really driving building a function like this. So I want to take you through some of the building blocks of a talent experience, and then I'll give you some examples of how we look at tackling problems within each of the pillars. So the first is that we already have the ability to automate 70% of repetitive tasks in our industry, and we should be hyper focused on this. This isn't scary. Like, if you really pay attention to what a lot of leaders in this space are talking about now, there's a lot of prediction that this is the movement's going to move people off technology and put us giving us the capability to be more human, to spend more time with each other. And in our space, if we can automate, we free our recruiting teams to spend more time with candidates, to spend more time with hiring managers. The second thing is that you have about 8 seconds on average to capture someone's attention. That's why you'll never see a big list of PowerPoint bullet points on these slides. So you have to be hyper obsessed with your end user. And we use a methodology called Jobs to be Done that really kind of puts us in the allows us to see through the candidate's lens in terms of why they hire or fire products, and we apply this to the talent acquisition space and the people space in general. That is the new oil. So when we talk about automation, data is really the building block for that. And data comes from a few different places. One of them is from sentiment. The other one's from every click inside a system. It's from transactions. And we take it very seriously. In fact, I don't know where he is out there, but we actually have a data scientist on our implementation team, a mathematician, and we're making sure our data models and our structures are set up right from the beginning. So you don't have to be a data expert, but you should definitely know what data you're collecting, how you're organizing that, and how that data is accessed. It's core. And unlearning. So with all of the change that's happening, obviously building the capabilities for the future is really important, but part of that is unlearning bad habits. So there's so many corporate cliches out there. There's so many old business books that are no longer relevant for the times we're working in now. And you know, just thinking about we're right in the beginning of implementing smart recruiters, and a cliche that's often thrown around inside companies is that technology should follow business process. And, you know, a lot of these things, they steer us sometimes in the wrong direction because we hear them, we think, okay, that's truth, and we should make sure that happens. But probably anybody in the room that's held that as a truth knows that you end up breaking the system. It doesn't work right. You over-customize it. It never does what you want it to do. So one shouldn't drive the other. They both should be informing one another. You should be taking cues from what the technology is capable of. When we get on an Uber app, we don't want to tell Uber like how to make it, you know, how to get the car to your house a different way. You know, we want them to innovate that process. And so that's what we're looking for from partners. But we have to unlearn a lot of these bad behaviors. And this is my favorite one. It's my own quote. The other ones I just stole. But it's that art happens at the edges of the bell curve, and we also need creativity on our team. And often the best ideas are sometimes the first ideas, and then as you sort of get out there and start socializing those ideas, the edges get rounded and rounded. It becomes safer and safer until it's just totally boring. And so how do you build a team that is comfortable challenging one another, feel safe to do that? So how do we think like designers? You know, designers, what they're taught in school is to put their designs up on a board and let people kind of just go at it and tear them down, and that helps them become a better designer. So how do we build teams that push ourselves to be the best before we go out and push the stuff we're building out to the world? And I'll pick on Jennifer Powers here. We call her J-Pow. The team, I think most of the members of the team, one of our team members actually had tickets to the Fyre Festival. I won't mention names there, but she didn't actually make it to the island. But so the team had watched the documentary, and I think J-Pow sent out a Slack note saying, okay, I've learned three things from this. One, you should have confidence to the point of almost getting arrested and still have even more confidence. You should always take one for the team. I didn't actually watch it, but I know where that line comes from. I'm really disappointed in you, J-Pow. Three, you should just set like insanely unachievable goals. So, no, I don't want the team to act immorally or break the law. But I like riffing off these ideas, because those ideas used in a positive way can be very powerful. All right, so these are some of the principles we run on, and not the Fyre Festival, the other ones. I want to take you into how we structured the team around this. So we have three pillars: the Talent Brand Studio, Talent Experience Innovation, and Talent Experience Learning. And the reason we put these together is it gives us front-to-end control over building the experience. So the Talent Brand Studio is about what is the experience we want to create? How do we surface up the best of the employee experience and amplify that? The way we amplify that is through our talent experience innovation. So this team looks at process and technology. We all know that employer brands, sure, there's some brick and mortar aspects of it. We show up at events. There's not much print advertising. There's probably some out there, but most of it's delivered through digital. And the experience of our candidates is delivered through digital. And the experience of our managers and our recruiters is mostly delivered through digital. And then again, when you look at the amount of change we're pushing through, if you build this stuff, but you're not building the capability to leverage it right or understand it, then you build really cool things and it sits in a lab or it sits in someone's basement. So we have to make sure we get people excited about what we're building as much as we get excited about building it. So I'm going to start with telling you a little bit more about our Talent Brand Studio, since that's really where, again, it all starts. And there's kind of four core concepts we think about in the studio. It's frame. So how do people think about us? What are their beliefs in our talent brand? And what do we want them how do we want them to think about us? Narratives, these are finding the most powerful employee experiences and making sure they surface up. So those are the stories. So the first one's how we tell it. The second one's the actual stories. The third one is, once we know those two things, how do we build really freaking cool creative to capture their attention? And then there's activation. So how do we get it in front of the right people in a measurable way and in a repeatable way? So a lot of what we do in the Talent Brand Studio is creative, but we also have to be calculated and it has to be measurable like the other areas. And I want to take you to the concept of frames for a minute, because I think it's one of the harder ones for people to get their head around, but it's fundamental in starting to build a talent brand or an employer brand. And frames are really they're belief systems, and our brains work through metaphors. So, you know, the first time we see something, we're usually like, oh, that's like something. And it starts to form a belief around that thing. So some of you have probably seen this example, but it's a really good example to help you get your head around this. So how do you get kids to stop smoking? The historic frame is smoking's dangerous. So smoking's dangerous, that's what we need to convey to kids. And all kinds of ads have been put out there to convey that smoking's dangerous. This was one that was saying that smoking causes impotence. There was probably better examples. I just like, you know, but I don't know. We hadn't seen, like, with you know, putting all of these messages out there, they hadn't seen a drop in teen smoking until 98. They saw an 8% drop in Florida, and they were able to reframe the story. So what they found is that by constantly getting out there and saying smoking is dangerous and putting out media that smoking is dangerous, what it was doing is, like, the frame for that for kids is, well, that's great. It's rebellion. Mostly what kids want to do is, like, go do things they shouldn't be doing. And so what they decided is they needed to change that frame from smoking is dangerous to smoking is manipulation. And so they put out a new advertising campaign where they conveyed that people were being manipulated, and they, for the first time, saw teen smoking drop. So really understanding what is the frame, what is the context your brand is sort of operating in now. So if you want to change that and attract new people in different ways, you have to understand that. And so for us in Silicon Valley, there's a positive to being in the Valley, and that's that typically they look at Silicon Valley firms. First of all, if you're in Silicon Valley, you're generally considered tech. That's one belief, that it's generally lucrative, it's innovative, there's really cool offices with beanbags and free food and all of this stuff. But there's a downside to that too. People sometimes see tech as elite, disconnected. There's a lot of attractive sameness. So if you go out there and look at, just when you get a chance, go look at every single tech company in Silicon Valley. Go look at their career site. Take the logos off, and you will see the exact same company, exactly the same. Uniform values. We all say the same thing. We're open, flexible, authentic, curious, and you see a level of purpose washing. So, not going to tell you where we're going yet with our frame, but our first piece is, how do we change that? How do we set ourselves apart in the Valley? The second piece I talked about is surfacing up these powerful experiences within the organization. So we have five narratives. I'm only giving you an example of one, trust through transparency. But I remember when probably not all of you know of the Alex Jones scandal, but there was a pretty big scandal on the platform, and Facebook and a few others shut this guy Alex Jones down. And Jack decided not to do it right away because he hadn't broken our policy. And it was a really hard decision for him. But he said, we're best to look at the policy and change that and not just make a super fast decision. Let's make sure we do it right. He goes, I know it's going to probably piss a lot of people off that work here. And he goes, if you don't like it, he's like, go out and tweet it. Say you don't like it. He's like, you can dissent from our decision. And I thought that was pretty powerful. You know, a lot of times, like when a company is going through a tough time, you get this feeling, it's like, okay, like let's support and align with the company. And here you have a CEO saying, go out and disagree, that's your right. And you hear this over and over again. So how do we grab these powerful experiences and get them out in front of people? I can't really talk about that part, but the third part, like I mentioned, is starting to build really cool media to grab people's attention. So we're in the process right now of building this out. So again, in 6 months, you will see it for real, not on a slide deck. But the fourth component is, again, how do we get the message out there? How do we get it in front of people? And there's a lot of different platforms. So the first piece is knowing where your audience is. So how do you get highly targeted? How do you measure it, and how do you make it repeatable? Like I said, and for us, I'm just sharing the our own platform. This is our own Twitter handle. We have a recruiting bot on there that interacts with candidates, but this will be a platform that we use heavily to amplify our message. We're finding that our user base is highly educated. It's right in the sweet spot for a lot of the areas that we hire for. And our user behavior more and more is showing that people are on the platform and very interested in building their career. So either following people to enhance their career, following people in those companies, following experts, and more people are posting on their profiles that their interest in career. So I'm not trying to sell you on using buying ads on Twitter, but we have this at you know, our disposal, and we haven't used it near to the extent that we can be. And that's like having Super Bowl ads in your pocket. So we are going to be using this platform like crazy. And I talked to Jerome. I think we might do some cool stuff together with smart recruiters in Twitter. So more to come on that. So the second pillar is talent experience innovation. So I'll talk about a couple principles here. First one is any technology that we go with has to be able to deliver a killer user experience. Like I said, this is how we're delivering our experience. It's part of the reason we chose smart recruiters. There are a lot of platforms with a lot of flexibility. What we found is a lot of them with a lot of flexibility, for whatever reason, we use that and we over-customize it to the point of creating crappy candidate experiences. So every point in the chain matters. Even the data models matter, because the data models ultimately drive the experiences as well. So anybody that's received an email marketing letter or email where it messes your name up, or there's like it says name in there where it's not even removed. So all of these little things that have implications from data, they matter. The second piece is constant innovation. So when we look for a partner, it's not just about where is the platform today, but it's how is that company talking about innovation? How excited are they? One of the things I asked Jerome last night, I said, you know, when do you plan on selling this company? Because if you sell this thing to like an SAP, I'm gonna like literally kill myself. So is that company thinking about the right things? Obviously, we could talk all day long about ML and AI, and if a company sort of writes that off or disses it, we had some of these companies inside our company. We're like, yeah, you know, it's more talk than reality. That's an instant turnoff for us. We need to see that they're driving forward in this space. And then the last one's really on us, and that's about having elegant process. So the technology, we all know, is only going to solve half the problem. If we're not looking at how do we remove things, so I think oftentimes when we look at process, it's sort of what do we build to solve this problem instead of what do we remove to solve this problem. So more and more, I think we have to look at what have we built up over the years that is making us more inhuman. I think I'm like out of time. I better speed this baby up. And then once you have the foundation really nailed, then it's where you can really start to have some fun. And so we're in the process of building out what we're calling an innovation lab, and that's about giving access to new technologies to our recruiting organization for them to explore, play with it, and for us to be able to surface up the right technologies to ship. So, you know, I think people in our space were always getting pinged with something new and without any critical thinking around it. So it's just like, hey, I saw this thing, let's buy it. And so we need a better model for really surfacing up what's right for us. And then the last piece is about learning. And when I started, I asked Steve, what do you want out of learning for the organization? And he's like, you know, I want this to be the place where recruiters come and they look back and say that was the place I learned the most in my career. Even if they don't stay here, that's what I want. And I said, so what behaviors do you want to drive? He said, no ego, no bureaucracy, no hierarchy, creativity, and to get shit done. I'm like, that's great. So you want to build capability, you want to drive the right behaviors. And so we broke it down into a few areas. The first one's take flight. We do extensive onboarding with any new person coming in. So how do we get them up to productivity fast? And how do we make sure they really get our culture and really understand the behaviors we're trying to drive? Spotlight's all about capability building. So what are the capabilities of the future that they need? So how do they tell better stories through data? How do they really understand brands in driving the right messages out there? And we also have a lot of self-driven peer-to-peer. So really trying to find challenging meaty projects to put our recruiters on so they really learn. And we also have really smart people that we bring in to train one another. So I'll end with, you know, where do we go from here? I often get asked, like, how far out do you think? Right now, as a company, Jack wants us to start thinking 7 years out. That's pretty amazing, 7 years out. Who knows what the hell will be going on 7 years out? But I like that. I like looking that far out directionally. We generally on our team look a year out, so it's a much more condensed time frame. We use 2 years just as a rudder. 1 year for planning, and then we break it down into quarterly increments. And we try not to go too far beyond that because it allows us more flexibility to move fast versus kind of start building for 5 years or 6 years only to find out that the world sort of shifted around us. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to this first episode of the Hiring Success Podcast. Feel free to subscribe to this podcast to be notified when a new episode is out every month. You can also have a look at our Hiring Success Journal for more articles about recruiting hacks, innovations, and product tips. To see more talented TA leaders like Steve in person, check out the next Hiring Success Conference, which will be this September in Amsterdam. You can grab early bird tickets on our website, www.smartrecruiters.com/hiringsuccess/Europe, and get an additional 30% off when you use the code HSPodcast30. That's HSPodcast30.